Okay, and welcome to Dark Guidance. I'm Chris.
I'm Brian.
I'm Colin.
And this is Norbert.
Yeah, welcome aboard, Norbert.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, while our tenuous connection holds, we are broadcasting, basically, we're probably going to do a podcast about SR 2017. Probably the topic that won't get obsoleted by the time this cast gets released, because it's just hit, and we've had some
games.
It's
not in CID.
It's not in CID. As much as I'd love to talk about Mog or Cold Grimmer or the fact that I really like the Troll CID that just happened, first of all, we'd be talking about Trolls then, and that's really just not acceptable. And two, we'd be talking about Trolls being not, like, actually people, which is, again, not acceptable. Guys.
Trolls have done a good job, though.
Trolls are competitive. They're just, they've been just sleeping it off, I think.
Yeah. I think the big one is just, I like the quality of life changes. Like, the fact that you can pump the Cruel Stone for Fury without having to use your caster to fuel it. It's just a nice change. It's something they've clearly wanted to do for a while. Just, like, stuff like the champions getting Sanguine Bond. Like, when we... I came up with a dumb list, which was basically, you take, like, a unit of champs with Scaldi, and then you add, like, three sorceresses onto them because they're weapon attachments, so they're clearly the same as Rocketeers. I'm like, okay, this is kind of dumb, but whatever. And then apparently they just gave them Sanguine Bond, so it's like, okay, they're now blood packs. Like, actually, like, blood transfusion packs. It's fantastic.
Does that actually work?
New
oh, yes, it
now
does.
Cold magic and also extra blood.
Yes.
Medic.
And that's the worst kind of medic. It's just like, don't worry about it, buddy, I've got this axe. Oh, God, my arm. Oh, I'll be fine. He's going without me.
The poor sorceress. First, he has to dispel, like, horrible things like Crippling Grasp and Parasite and other just, like, aid spells. And then he gets just pumped for blood. And then he gets healed by Madrak so he can get pumped for more blood.
Oh, gosh. That does sound pretty awful. He's mentioned it.
I strongly, strongly detest the rule Sanguine Bond. It is a super strong rule. And it caused me no end of troubles under Harvey in Mark II. So I have bad touch memories of that ability.
Boo-hoo.
I can agree with that.
I'm really happy to see it in a place that needs it. But when I first read it, I was like, oh, God, somebody is going to play this and just destroy people. It's going to be so awful for a new player. You're going to go in with your best unit. You're going to shoot it all at his champs. And then no champs are going to die and they're going to kill your entire unit. And you're going to be like, But what did I do?
But wait, there's more, because Madrak also shows up like, you know all that damage you dealt? You must have dealt like 50 damage. I'm just going to roll, let's see, 9d6 plus, what's 9 times 3 again? 27. So 9d6 plus 27, wounds are healed. That actually just translates to a full heal of literally everything you damaged. Have fun with that. Also, they're like steady, tough, plus 2 defense.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Def 16. Seems good.
Right, let's
anyway,
talk about...
Anyway, so we weren't going to talk about Trolls.
No, we weren't. So let's talk about SR 2017, which has come out for a couple of weeks now, and we've been playing it, and I'll be honest, from the first time we played SR 2017, back when it was in CID, to now, it's frankly probably a completely different pack, even though it shares some of the same trappings. Games feel very different. I found it...
Before you jump into it properly, Chris, can I just give a quick shout out? Zaziah on Facebook, if you can find her in any of the groups, she's done a gender neutral language version of the entire pack and put it up for public consumption. So if you want a pack that doesn't refer to he's and she's, you can grab that pack straight from her.
Cool. Is that also the one with the spread, the like flowchart as well? Like the really, there was a really good document. There's like a single page which has literally
everything.
I've got
everything. The single pager on my phone right now. That's not from, I don't think that's from her. I don't know where that came from.
Oh, well.
Agatha put it together.
Sweet. Well, that's also excellent.
Awesome.
That's brilliant. Because you're just like, all the snares are there, all the basic rules you need are there, and you're just done. And you can just play.
Yep. So, speaking of which, changes from CID till now. First, it's 5 points to win. Second, scenarios are live. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
The big change is that now, instead of having every warrior model control a circular zone, only units control circular zones, and solos instead get to control flags, which was excellent because flags were the incredibly dead element. It was actually something we were looking at, well, I was looking at in the closing days of SR 2016. I think flags were like one of my favorite scenario pieces because they encourage a lot of action in a very focused area. They can be abusive, like the whole thing with Harvey back in MK2, basically feeding and, you know, incursion. No one liked that, right? No one liked that at all. Apart unless you played Menoth, in which case you fucking loved it, along with your Sanguine Bond Bastions.
You know what's annoying? A Sanguine Bond Bastion standing next to a fucking flag, I'll tell you that.
But one of the reasons why is, like, they focus, like, as long as they're not abusable, they focus a lot of the action in closed areas, but the fact that no one was able to, like, score them apart from the Warcaster meant they were basically like, okay, they're either irrelevant, or they're basically where your caster goes to die. Not great in either case. Does promote the assassinations.
So the downside, from my point of view, to the flag change is that now, when I was subsidizing lists using solos instead of units to try and deal with the whole having to score two different things, I can't do that anymore. So if you're playing a dedicated jack list, and the theme list that you have gives you, say, free solos to go with your jacks, like heavy metal, then you suddenly have a problem if there are things that you have to score with either your Warcaster or a unit, because now, which is a good thing in the case of Haley, now Haley has to go stand in that zone.
Yep.
But in the case of everyone else, that can be a bad thing. And for Crix, that's another like little nail in a fairly extensive coffin on their current jacklist availability.
Well, to be fair, their current jacklist doesn't like exist, so that is a bigger problem in my opinion.
Correct.
The realistic truth is it means that your min unit of mechanics that you generally can fit in a bunch of these jacklists takes on a whole different meaning. And yes, as you said, Haley cannot take said min unit of mechanics. And that's pretty big. Because it means
It means my machine wraiths don't score either in those zones anymore. Which is good for the game, probably, but it's bad for me.
It's good for the game, but I mean, they can also just contest and being annoying that way, and that still has value. Yeah, yeah.
And them also controlling flags in some scenarios is pretty hot as well, especially if you make them for free.
It's okay.
The other thing, too, is the objectives have... well, they haven't really changed. It's more like now we've actually got to play with them more. They've been clarified. A couple of things. So there's only three objectives now. Armory, Fuel Cache, Stockpile. Fuel Cache is different. Just gives Pathfinder. Armory got nerfed from the first... Well, basically from SR 2016 till
every
now.
Every version it has been.
Yes. So Armory now only works on the first attack you make this turn. This is... it's good on some... It's fine on some models, like, say... for example, like a threshing model or Victor or something with a giant AoE or spray.
It's not on the first attack you make because that was the problem that Guided Hand had. It's the next attack you make. Okay. Because if it's the first attack you make, that means technically if you had a vengeance move and attack, that triggers it, and then it doesn't actually do anything regardless if you've actually had the ability on... It was weird.
Okay, fair enough. So...
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So no, it's the next attack you make.
I think that's the wording.
It's also not basic, which is good, because it means that if you have, like, a star action spray, like, you know, Venom or something, that's fine. Okay, not Venom, like, a star action. I don't know, like...
Fortunately, my Venom is now magical!
I guess it could mean, like, if you have Ancillary Infection, the Jack can move up... No, because you have to choose it during your control phase. I don't know, it's awkward. I guess they can...
It'll work on Purge, for example, which it wouldn't have before.
Sorry?
If it was a basic attack. It'll work on Bilethrall Purge, which it wouldn't have worked on if you had basic attack.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
There you go. That's the best example we've had so far.
Yep. Fuel Cache now grounds Pathfinder. It's quite handy. It's certainly the one that you'd take if your faction of Jacks does not have access to Pathfinder routinely, such as Signar or Menoth. Or certainly, even if in, like, say, Trolls, where your Pathfinder out is, like, Rush, but you want to, like, you know, rage and smash something... Fuck, why do we keep mentioning Trolls? Anyway.
Let's be honest, you're going to want it for everything in a lot of cases. Like, things like Circle, who have Pathfinder on some things, are still going to want it for stuff like Getrix. Things like Crix are going to want it, even though some of their Jacks have Pathfinder.
Yep. So. Even if your caster has, like, access to Pathfinder, you might just go take this anyway, because, like, I don't fucking pay
free
for Pathfinder. Free Pathfinder is better than paying for Pathfinder. And then finally...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go for it, Norbert.
Cause...
You're going to have to learn to talk over the top, Norbert.
Yes.
Oh, no, you're going to talk about the third objective. I'll chime in after that with a thought.
Very well. Stockpile's the big one. It's basically, during your maintenance failures, choose one model and it heals D3. It's friendly faction for whatever reason, not too big a deal. Now, it heals for D3 during maintenance. This is important for a couple of reasons. One, if you shoot out someone's cortex or take out their spirit and then freeze or knock them down or do any other effect that basically you need to shake, with Stockpile, that doesn't work because they can heal it and then restore their cortex, which means they can power up, incidentally, and then shake the effect. Pretty big deal. Second, this is specifically for Epic Haley, who's a pretty uncommon caster, but, you know, she shows up from time to time. If Haley goes in and does a very common trick where she goes into your Colossal and smashes one half of it and feeds on top of you, and you can't turn to face, and she's killed all your mechanics because Signar have, like, they've lost Electro Leap.
A thousand ways
to kill the mechanics. You can use Stockpile to restore your, basically, your side that's been busted, even without mechanics, and go return the favor.
I mean, let's be honest, even if they haven't killed the mechanics, as long as they're not currently in base-to-base, they can't repair it anyway, so...
More likely, yes. So, that provides a bit of an insurance policy against that one. And Norbert, now chime in.
Oh, no, I was just saying, it's great. You were talking about, you were alluding to how these things are more useful now, and I wanted to agree with that because you get to pick them each matchup, so you're not restricted in them. And so, yeah, depending on the scenario that comes up or the opponent that you're facing, you can pick the one that's actually going to be useful, which I think is really nice. And the fact that there's not that many of them to choose from makes it a little easier, too.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's a significant difference in two easy cases I can think of. One is if you want to try and play an Inhospitable Ground type control caster, and your opponent now has the option, after seeing what you're playing, to pick something that gives one of their important models Pathfinder. And B, if you're playing Ghost Fleet and someone now has the option to pick after they see what you're playing, something that makes their big gun actually hurt your battle engine. So it's interesting.
Yeah. Or like Menoth, if you're playing against Menoth, you can just like, okay, well, at least one of my guns is going to be magical to like put some damage down, even if I don't particularly have a solution myself.
And Menoth will always have one Pathfinder jack.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, for Menoth, they're like, oh, please give me the Pathfinder. I'll give it to Sevi. I'll give it to everyone. I'm drunk on Pathfinder now.
Well, you can't rely on it because they're still only in three of the six scenarios.
Yeah, it's true. And finally...
Blowing them up becomes more important, though, for that reason.
Agreed. Yeah, that's true.
Which is good.
But it's another really great change is the fact they've essentially become incorporeal for friendly models in terms of line of sight and moving through them.
That is amazing, by the way. If anyone, like, any effect that relies on positioning, like countercharge, that you kind of don't want people running to engage you or doing other things, fucking fantastic. Having, like, a jack countercharge through an objective is just a bit weird, but really fucking strong.
Well, I think PP was also sick and tired of having to plan their scenarios around this large base in the middle of the table that their Colossals can't walk around.
Yeah, the Colossal, like, kicks the objective, stubs its toes, like, ow, I can't do anything.
Please, heal me for D3. It's handy for a lot of things, right? Like, there's a lot of casters that are going to really appreciate it. It's kind of a pity, and I understand why they did it, but it's a pity that you can't now get the objectives that are girded or the objectives that give you cover.
Yes.
Because it would have been super sweet for a lot of casters to be able to hang out behind an objective that gives them cover, but still be able to charge through it to things and come back.
Yeah, some casters also, like, would
have loved being able to do that.
Yeah. Denny, Haley even. Sorsha fucking loves this objective, I can tell you that much.
Well, Sorsha's like, I'm going to hide here, and then I'm going to zip out and then come back.
Yeah.
And then zip out and then come back.
It's like a cloud that doesn't go away until you kill this, like, 18-box, this 15-box armor 18 piece of shit that is technically not really adding anything to my army, but you really want it dead.
Hey.
Yeah, side point. Who's happy to see Sorsha back in the meta? Yay!
When did Sorsha leave the meta? Come on, Colin.
Yay.
I've been quite happy with Sorsha playing that list, I'll have you know.
I don't like Sorsha.
Says the guy who plays mostly infantry factions.
You fucking beat me that game. Therefore, Sorsha clearly needs help.
I still don't like Sorsha. It's not that she's not beatable, I just don't like her.
Now the truth comes out.
I wasn't aware it was ever hidden.
No, it's probably... I'm glad Sorcerer has joined your, like, list of other things you hate, like Sanguine Bond, apparently.
Yeah. There are many, many rules on my list of things that I strongly dislike for various reasons. Sorcerer's one of them.
Lovely. Anyway, the other thing that's...
A lot of them are things that kill warp wolves, now that I think about it.
Colin, where on the dolly has said model touched you?
You're a warp wolf.
Yes.
Every model has touched me right in the warp wolf, generally.
Which would be funny, because I'm pretty sure one of those models would have been your Morvana 2, now that I think about it.
Oh, Sorcerer has killed lots of different things.
Yep.
High defense is not a good defense against Sorcerer, turns out.
Well, yes, unless you can cheat and bring some, like, basically taunt, effectively.
Or immunity to cold. Yeah. Army-wide immunity to cold.
Side note, fucking trolls. Why are they now all immune to cold? This is, like, supreme anti-Kador bias. It's really fucking bad, and, like, PP,
it's anti-Sorcerer bias, thank you.
Anti-Kador bias, PP, please fix. Alright, and then, I guess, moving on to, like, before we talk even more about fucking trolls, the other thing that sort of changed with SR-17 from CID to now is that it now takes 5 points to win instead of 6.
Which somehow has made a massive difference to things.
It seems to, doesn't it?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, no, everyone used to complain that these things are non-scenarios because nobody's going to get more than 6. And I routinely am in difficulty making sure I keep up. Maybe because it's the flag thing now, but keeping up so that I don't fall behind by 5.
Yeah, it's a double whammy because there's a reduced, like, threshold, which means that a couple of the scenarios, like, some of the problems with the old pack were that maximum score you could get per turn would be at most, like, 2 points, and you had to beat them by 6. So you'd literally have to score for 3 turns in a row without them, like, scoring anything. Now, let's just say you take said scenario, but now you get at most 3 points. Well, that means that you've clocked it down to, if you get 2 turns of uninterrupted scoring, you win the game. And then, in addition, there's just more elements to score, and it's changed a bit as well. So, yeah, it's these scenarios are a lot more live. I, personally speaking, I actually quite like the how live they are, as they are.
Oh, yeah. They're scary, and they sneak up on you.
Yes.
At first, nothing is happening, and all of a sudden, the guy is up by 4 points. And how that happened.
Yeah. But
Once you start losing stuff, once you start losing models, suddenly the scenario scoring becomes a lot more accelerated because there's so many places to score from.
Yes.
Yeah, it's almost always possible to clear something and score something, no matter which side of the table you're on. In fact, managing to stop the other person from scoring on your own turn has suddenly become difficult.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And you sometimes don't have to, because you can go like, okay, I can let you score your zone because I'll score my zone. And I can try that, but you can only do it for so many turns. Like, I did it in our game, Colin, where basically I was like, oh, fuck, I can't be bothered killing this Stalker. There's, like, a million ghost pirates to kill. I left that tick for a couple of turns, and all of a sudden, wait, I'm down, like, 3 points, and very quickly going to be at 4 points. I can't keep doing this. I got to do stuff.
Which is good. It seems to, so far, serve exactly what I think most people wanted and complained about from the end of CID, which was, we don't want scenario to be a complete non-condition. We would like it to be a live condition that forces people to do things. And that's what this seems to do.
Agreed. It's quite good for that, too.
Whether or not it's possible currently to outright win the game without the other person getting to play, there's people complaining about that online, but it's kind of hard to tell whether... I haven't seen that happen to me yet, but that doesn't mean that it's not possible at all. It just means that I take most of what I read on Twitter with a grain of salt, because there's a lot of people that have got like 3.5 kilos of salt behind what they're saying. So,
agreed. From personal experience, I think it's exactly as you said, Norbert. If you don't respect the scenario will come along and just break your kneecaps. If you do respect it, then it's a much more gradual game, which is tend to be how we tend to play. Would be basically like, well, all right, the scenario is going to be relevant, so like, make sure you're there, make sure you show up on time and contest these zones. And if you get especially if you get surprised by like a control caster, it's a tale as old as War Machine, right? Get surprised by a control caster feats you out of a zone, and then you're like, well, fuck.
Yeah. Hey, I'm winning this game. Oh, that's okay. I can just wait out his feet. Oh, God.
Yeah.
And then, I think for me, the biggest thing compared to 2016 has been that there are zones that they score in on the far side of from you.
Yeah.
That is really, really odd. So in other words, I call it defensive scoring.
Yes.
In other words, it's scoring that you ought to be just doing for yourself. And if you're not, then you're really falling behind. And consequently, they're always going up if you don't really – and I mean far – and some of these zones are really far away from you. So you have to do a major commitment of your forces over there to at least contest it. Which is me sometimes
on
just throwing stuff
net,
away.
On Spread the Net, there's their close zone, or, and your close zone, is 27 inches away from the other table edge.
Yeah.
So it's two turns of running for a lot of units.
Yeah.
Like, you can't get there unless you ran both turns to contest it the first time they will score it.
And from personal experience, a lot of these are perfectly positioned to just have a colossal park there and, like, slowly trudge up the table while still being a scenario threat because it's anchoring your own friendly zone.
Yeah, similar. Toes that zone and then walks forward far enough to toe one of the circles and be a contesting slash controlling pain in the butt.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not to mention the flag. Spread the Net is a really good example of everything that I think the Steamroller 2017 design philosophy is doing. It's because of the fact of what you just said. In addition, there's the flag that's on the far side of the table from what you just said, but closer to you. That is just basically free points.
Yeah.
Usually. You know?
Yeah, both teams can score 2 points every turn if neither team is really pushing to contest.
Yeah.
Right.
And furthermore, like, Spread the Net was actually my favorite. Well, Spread the Net and Standoff were my two favorite scenarios from the old pack, and they continue to be my two favorite scenarios because they're live and interesting. Also, one thing I've noticed in SR 2017 in general is that ambush is a much more relevant rule for scenario play, and both of these offer excellent ambush opportunities.
Definitely.
Yeah. In addition, just the way the scenarios are positioned allows a caster to a lot of times straddle zones, and the caster can be a bit of a wild card in terms of contesting. As you probably noticed, a couple of these scenarios, you actually don't have to contest the circular zones if they're running certain casters or lists, the big one being Heavy Metal. Because, like, Heavy Metal Haley will literally, unless they're willing to not take their fourth free solo, will literally not have a unit to score any of the circular zones. So you can be pretty sure that Haley will show up there to control it, or you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
And this does also change the dynamic. Like, for instance, Jaws of the Wolf, like, Norbert, you know this, you usually just get a Widowmaker Marksman as your third solo. Well, that Widowmaker Marksman is one of the best solos to put on one of those rando flags. He can still contribute in the game. He's got stealth. More importantly, like, he's now a scenario piece that your opponent has to fucking deal with at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, well, actually, you bring up a larger thing that I've been noticing, and is that the tension that SR 2017 design is bringing to the theme force philosophy of the game.
Yes.
So, yeah. So, in other words, you the theme forces now are... You have to think a lot harder about how you're putting them together and how you're going to use the limited elements that you have in each theme force because of the way Steamroller 2017 demands you do things.
Definitely. Yes.
No, I agree. Definitely, I've started playing Grimkin since they released the same time this packer pretty much did, and you play it pretty significantly different than from when we got to play test it in the CID, mostly because we were playing in 2017, and the lists that worked in the CID don't necessarily apply to the new 2017 meta in general. I mean, a lot of their lists, they like to brick up, so trolls are going to probably have this problem too, and a couple other type of lists that really like to have, like, a center point of power, because you really need to be able to spread out to contest and to score in these scenarios. Like, bricks are not as effective, I don't think, as they once were.
I'd absolutely agree, because one of the casters I've recently played and did quite well at a tournament at, realistically, recently, was Zakova 1. And she is a Cloudwall caster, and she has a very good control feat, and she runs a pretty mean brick. Like, I was... I'm a bit annoyed that I don't get to play this list more now, but basically I played what I dubbed Early Access Manowar Theme, which was basically what I predicted would be in Manowar Theme without the theme bonus. And turns out that Ragman's pretty good, especially with this new, if that new merc change is going through. But more importantly, like, I just wanted Shock Troopers, because Shock Troopers don't die when you randomly touch them with things, unlike, say, Pikemen. The main problem is when I tried it in SR 2016. Fantastic. It was really good in, like, say, Recon, for instance. It was just great. And then, trying SR 2017, I'm noticing all of a sudden, hang on, this is, like, a really big change in how this game is being played, and I can't... Because normally what would happen is I'd be able to get two units of Shock Troopers on 1 point, especially in, say, Recon, where you had only one singular rectangular zone that was the focal point of the game. Now they're like, look at Standoff and look at Spread the Net. Spread the Net... You might be able to conceivably trudge up the center of the table. Cool. But there's no fucking way you're going to have, like, say, Manowar Shock Troopers contesting their far flags. So scenario then is going to be incredibly reactive. And look at standoffs. Standoffs, the two circles are 24 yeah. inches apart. And there's probably something in the middle of the table as well, blocking line of sight, which is a pretty common thing of most table setups. Either of these things are not going to be great for your brick of shock troopers. And a similar thing with, say, Brian, you were alluding to this earlier. Like, say, a Dreamer brick. If anyone hasn't played against it, a Dreamer Beast brick in Dark Menagerie with, like, the Gremlin Swarms and all that.
It's annoying.
It's really annoying. Can you deal with a Def 17 Skinnermones if you don't have easy access to knock down a stationary? If the answer is no, then you're probably just not going to be able to shoot off the table. And you're probably not going to be able to punch it either, because there's a bunch of Incorp Skinnermones acting as, like, landmines, effectively.
No, no, it's, you have a bunch of the Gremlin Swarms. Gremlin Swarms. Not Skinnermones. Because they sit just far enough that a heavy can't get into physical reach of a Skinnermones in the Artificer Deviation and just act as this little incorporeal barrier. So they don't actually block them as much as they just take up the space where they can't
land.
Yeah,
just crowd up landing spot.
Yeah, exactly. And so that list is much less effective because it's not very mobile. It just slowly trudges up the board, eventually reaching a point where it can get the alpha or at least start the trade in a favorable position. And that's a really effective list, but now it's going to need a lot of tweaking in order to have the pieces you need to play in those far-ranging scenarios, situations.
Yeah.
One of the annoyingly frustrating things that has happened, I've recognized, is that when you play Ghost Fleet, I know everyone's got their violins out for this, but when you do, you can't actually score the circle zones very well, because the only unit you have that is willing to actually have its entire unit membership in a place is your Blackbanes, and as soon as they aren't available for that, you can't get a whole Revenant crew unit into a zone without risking losing the entire unit. So you actually can't score in a lot of those situations. You're just kind of there, sort of winning, but not able to actually do much.
Well, one of the changes in 2017, I don't know if we've mentioned it already, is that a unit under half power, under half the amount of the models meant to be in it, actually scores now. They're not a non-scoring entity like they were in previous.
Yeah, I find that a little crazy, actually, because you could have just one guy left and still be able to score, which, I don't know, doesn't sit right with me somehow.
That's Steve. Steve is always the last man standing who scores all the points.
I have had a game where I've had, like, two mechanics left, and one of them is in the zone, and one of them is not in the zone, so I've just summarily executed the guy not in the zone.
It's not in the zone.
And
yeah, of course.
I'm now scoring. Yay. Oh, by the way, Colin, that thing, forget a violin. You need, like, a giant full-size cello. Like, that was the most, like...
No, I think you need an organ.
I just had this organ. It's like, you're two mechanics. One of them's 15 meters to the left of the other one. They're both standing there with wrenches, and Sorsha just walks up and goes, John, you're holding Steve back. I'm sorry, but you've got to go.
Yeah, we're cutting you loose.
We're cutting all Yeah. I mean, there is a couple of a lot of, like, verisimilitude breaking things in SR 2017, especially coming from the old pack. It just mentally bogs my mind to just not have to contest the zone, because one of the first games I lost was against Haley. It was Jack playing Haley, and then I realized, like, why the fuck did I spread out? She actually can't score one of the big circles. I'm like, why did I contest that?
I kind of like that for the new scenarios in terms of list building. I mean, now you can't just play the auto spam list because it's really good and it has good synergies. Now you have to consider, well, that's going to put me at a severe disadvantage, and it will also start to impact actual pairings. Like, now we have to consider, do we have a pairing that can score in the very multiple different types of scenarios where there are no... where there's not a circle zone, or there's only one to the two jacks. So you can't just play spam lists and just rely on just two infantry spam lists. You need to take something that has jacks if you want to participate, or vice versa, where you can't just play jack spam, or you might just get out scenarioed.
Yeah. I'd say
does that make specialists better?
I think it will make champions and specialists must better, because you will be able to adapt to scenario rather than to matchup.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Because I can definitely see cases where if I have a pair and I have a preferred option into an opponent, and that option has, say, very limited infantry, and the scenario is Outlast, which has basically two big circles and two flags, and that's it, I could see me choosing the less preferred drop in order to be able to play the scenario.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even just having...
Which is horrifying.
I know, right?
But it
I mean, I don't want to have to plan to try and have a drop for Haley and then also try and plan to have two options in case I get the wrong scenario.
But, I mean, as we've spoken, I mean, Haley's a very strong scenario caster, so, I mean, she's not at too much of a disadvantage. But there is the truth that a heavy metal Haley list will actually have problems playing scenario in...
Well, it certainly can't play out last, right?
Well, exactly.
Yes, literally, she can score.
Well, she's the only model, which means you can contest that and just score your zone if she's more worried about scoring hers. I mean, that
puts
her...
You know where she's got to be. She's either going to be on a flag or in one of the two circles.
Yeah.
And that's the only place that her entire army can score, basically.
Yeah, but you know, it's quite telegraphed.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Which means you know where she is.
No, it's interesting.
Yeah, no...
It adds more complexity.
Yeah, agreed.
But, I mean, if you're in a jack-heavy, like, scenario, you might just get screwed. But, I mean, that's always been... A little bit of scenarios.
Truth be told, I actually think it's more detrimental for jack spam than infantry spam because most, like, all casters will have a battle group. That's just how it is, right?
Yes.
And more importantly, a lot of those infantry themes also get battle engines, and battle engines count as effectively war jacks or war beasts.
Which is a good thing for Crix because you were mentioning that Crix was having a little bit of an issue figuring out what jacks it wants to take. But if it's taking a battle engine, that does help your situation.
Yeah, agree.
I mean, you've always got lights for Krix. So contesting and controlling zones isn't your problem normally because you've always got a couple arc nodes and a stalker or something like that lying around. So,
but to
it's
be fair,
not that big a deal. You just don't have a good list to run heavy jacks, which is fine.
Yeah.
I mean, your battle engine is in corp, so it can literally just sit in that zone and go da 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 da.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't make a in corp can't score condition.
Yeah.
I figured they might.
Yeah, like that. One of the most common complaints I've heard is Haley 3. Good
old. Kind of ridiculous.
Haley 3 might have disappeared off of people's radar, but she still lives on in our hearts. It's like a blight.
She's still there.
To be fair, Giganta will never let us forget.
Well, I'll put it this way. Gravediggers will never let you forget because you'll never be able to kill all of them. I'm not looking forward to that list, by the way, just FYI.
King of Nothing.
It's going to have Siege 2 in it. It'll be awesome.
Actually, I just segued myself into something good, I think. Okay, so one... I'm going to put this
nice
way.
Nice self-congratulatory segue.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah,
well, look, I'm not that big a deal in the local meta, but I'm a pretty good player, just so you know. All right.
We haven't even got to what you segued to yet, or were you just segueing to, I'm a good player?
Well, I mean, I did do pretty well. No, what I was trying to basically phrase this... Lest we forget. I was trying to basically phrase this in such a way that didn't immediately cause some shit, but we got to be honest. So, one of the things that's changed in SR 2017 compared to 16 is that you're only allowed two table markers, I think is the term. And I'm not going to get into the politics and all that shit, because, to be honest, that subject being
done
today.
It's fine. It's freaking fine.
It's fine. But it does change how some models are physically played because it makes a lot of things, especially stuff like cloud placement, much more difficult. And that actually does need to be factored in. So, for instance, take Gravediggers. Trencher theme, every guy has a smoke cloud. It's actually going to be quite difficult and a bit of a skill cap to basically see if you can efficiently play clouds down. And that needs to be weighted in because... It will add, like, realistically speaking, no one's going to douche you over it for such a minor thing, unless you're literally doing something crazy. But it needs to be thought of when you're running any kind of cloud list. How do I efficiently place these clouds down? Models like Kodiaks, for instance, fantastic. You can have a proxy for where the Kodiak's going to be, a proxy for the cloud is. As soon as you move, if you've got two Kodiaks, you can move the first one, proxy out the cloud, then proxy out the base of the second Kodiak. Drop it in, done, you're good. And then you can move on to the next one. For a unit like Trenches, which is probably going to be seeing a fair bit of resurgence with Gravediggers, a bit of a different story.
All I can say is I used to play Grey Lords in Mark 1 and had to figure that all out by eye, so...
Yeah, playing Bradigus with double fucking sentry stones in Mark 2 was the same. You had to sit there with widgets. Druid cloud walls were the same.
Yeah.
I agree, it is harder. You got the end result was you got a less efficient cloud wall, so you didn't get a touching to touching, you got a like bit of an overlap based on how nervous you were at the time.
Yeah.
And and that was really the only, and you got a little bit of argument from time to time, which is the bit that I don't like to have back, but I mean, we'll deal with it.
Agreed. Yeah. The best thing is, if you're doing a cloud wall, just measure about 2 inches. Yeah, this infantry cloud wall, the easiest way is just measure about 2 inches between each model. That's will form a cloud wall. It won't be quite perfect, but it'll be good enough.
It'll overlap.
Yeah. It'll overlap a touch, but like not like that's the easiest.
It's better to be safe than sorry when you're making a cloud wall, because a cloud wall that isn't complete isn't a cloud wall.
Yeah, and the second an important
thing. It's a focus fire targeting mechanism for your opponent.
Yeah, it's when you
start the model.
It leaves a 2 meter
There's a
warp wall
stalker over here. Shoot it.
Yep. It leaves a 2 meter wide exhaust port of which your opponent can shoot their entire army through. And then the second
can
one
we
is.
Go on to another topic?
Go. Why not?
No, I wanted to talk about the turn 7 phenomenon.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Go for it.
You mean the non-existent phenomenon of doom?
Yes.
Well, I don't know. You say that, but I had an interesting situation the other night where we were both clocking down, but because of the turn 7 thing and the fact that he was up on scenario points and the 15-second rule, all that combined that I couldn't actually clock him out. Because turn 7 would arrive sooner via the 15-second rules, and he was ahead on scenario points, so that he would get me on the tiebreak. Whereas in SR16, I would have comfortably been able to clock him out and actually win the game.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
that was
probably good, right? In a way?
Yeah, I think so.
I think they were...
Because everyone complains about clocking out being not a nice way to win, so they solved that problem.
I think that depends on the player. I think one of the ones they wanted to get over was the whole, like, slapping the clock back and forth between two players at the end of a game, which is just a bunch of people watching people slap a clock going, okay, that activates, slap, yeah. And to see who ends at a time first. And that was...
Now your problem is trying to keep track of the turn at the same time as doing that, right?
Well, that was the thing, yeah.
Yeah,
you're not supposed to do this, but I had to pause the clock to A, confirm that we're moving the turnover, and B, also to sometimes calculate all the points, because the points get, like, into double digits now sometimes.
Yeah, that's my biggest problem, actually, with the SR 2017 is bookkeeping. Like, it's just... It was easy back in the day when all you had to do was... The only turn that actually mattered was second player's second turn, because at that point, everything is done, you can just move on, it's all good. Now you have to keep track of how many points are scored in total, because the tiebreak is still, like, for a tournament, is still, like, total control points, meaning you could have a game of, like, 15 control points versus 20, and be like, well, you won by 5 over, but we literally both scored double-digit control points. In addition, I've had to do that as well, Norbert, is that you just pause it, just be like, hang on, what turn are we on again? Because we're getting close to the deadline. And it douches both players over if we basically just lose because we're literally marking down on a piece of paper or using dice to try and figure out how many points we're on.
I mean...
Right.
I mean...
Right, that's not something you want to rush the point. And especially when you're getting towards the end of the game and the clock is winding down, it's not cool.
Agreed.
I mean, the most ideal scenario is if we had, like, some sort of, like... Because I remember back before people, like, death clocks was still new and people were implementing death clocks. People were using their phones and they would tap the phone and it would switch over. I mean, if in the best case scenario, someone makes an app where it counts how many times you slap the time over, which would then start counting turns at the same time.
Yeah.
Because then every time you slap it over for a decision in your turn, it would fuck the whole system.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
Sure, counter charge would just break your entire clock keeping.
Oh, that's true. Unless you
have
some
way... Yeah, we discussed it during the SR 2017 setup, and I was like, this will work. Oh, wait, no, this is going to be terrible. You're playing against Axis, and your alarm starts on turn two. It's like, beep, 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 the game's over.
Yeah, that's an issue.
Whoops. Even if they flip it over because they have to decide if they may want to trigger countercharge.
Yeah. Or admonition. Right.
Or admonition. Or,
things,
yeah.
Or, hey, I have an arcana I can trigger. Maybe let me think about it for a second.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Good old out of activation.
That actually brings up another issue that I remember people talking about. And this is more of a sportsmanship one. And this is the, hey, do you want to farm scenario points? Because that is definitely something two people could do.
Oops,
in
I
this
forgot
scenario.
To contest your zone again. Oh, no.
Which, I mean, in the rules, because there is a sportsmanship where they talk about collusion and this stuff that you can avoid. Sure. But, I mean, this is something, unless someone's actually watching the game or paying attention, is definitely something two people could, you know, theoretically do. And that could...
Right, but the problem the problem isn't really the collusion. The problem is that you can actually have a situation where you go through five rounds of tournament,
yep,
and somebody had one of those games that went to turn six and they scored 23 points each.
Yep.
That
yep.
can happen. And, yep. and no, then absolutely. Some other poor bastard has played games down to the wire and scored 2 points in each game.
And
their entire score is invalidated by your one game.
Yes.
I mean, one...
Well,
one...
isn't it the difference, though, that the TOs
no.
are supposed to record?
No,
no. No, you count total.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that would make sense if you counted the difference, right?
Agreed. That's what I thought they were going to go with, but apparently not. Huh.
That's bizarre.
Especially because...
Yeah, it just didn't end up making it into the pack for some reason.
Yeah. Especially because there's some games where, like, one of the things I like about SR 2017 is it's a valid choice not to contest your opponent's flag or zone or whatever, because your intent is to score your own zone, clear it off chaff, and just basically use that as your own force of pressure. As opposed to, like, you know, back in SR 2016, where if you go on close quarters and your opponent's caster was on his flag, you had to answer that every turn, or else it'd quickly get out of control. Not so much the case these days. But, again, it can lead to the random game of, okay, well, two control casters controlled it out, and it looks like you both have, like, double-digit score. I mean, even a game where I played on Wednesday against Frawley playing Madrak 2, that game went into... We scored about 8 points apiece, and he ended up... Yep. I think it was 8-10 was the final score, and that wasn't like... It was also on a very dead scenario. Like, well, I wouldn't say dead, but it was on a not quite a live scenario. It's because I took over one circle, he took over the other circle, and there was no way we could get models in the other circle. He ended up winning because he had Hawthor live for, like, three fucking turns and just, like, troll me before I could clear him out. And he cleared his zone faster than I could clear mine. And, well, that was all she wrote. Eventually, I lost it several turns later due to turn seven, actually. Speaking of which, turn seven is something I've never seen happen in SR 2017 CID. And I've actually seen happen a significantly more than I expected amount in the final pack.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I've gone to turn seven yet, honestly.
I've gone close, and I've hit turn seven in at least two games.
You do play a super
attrition. I haven't
gone
there yet, but I haven't played that many games since the release of the pack.
Fair.
I mean, I feel like it's something you're going to see more with attrition lists, and Chris, I mean, that's like your specialty.
Yeah, well...
So
well,
it's not surprising that you're going to see a lot of turn seven finishes.
Yeah, but one aspect is you don't have to do mental gymnastics a lot of the time trying to figure out how to score your opponent's flag. Like, sometimes you might just go in a holding pattern, and you take a shorter turn in order to just score what you can on your zone. I don't know. It's sure. something I've noticed. It's more in a balanced game, I find. Like, because if it's an unbalanced game, as you said earlier, Norbert, right, points get run away really quickly, and then you have to start scrambling back or look for caster kills or whatever.
Right. Yep.
So, I remember them talking about SR 2017 when they were in the testing, and that they wanted this to be a less scenario-based packet, where they were like, we want this to be a more assassination-focused game. We want scenario to matter less. And this feels like scenario matters more than ever in a way, and that an assassination is actually less valuable, because from what I can tell and from what I've heard, so if someone knows differently, you can tell me I'm a raging idiot. But from what I understand, if you get a caster kill in the new packet, you don't actually get the battle group with it.
That's right.
Yeah. Which makes
you also don't get any scenario points, right?
No, you do. You at assassination, you score whatever the current table looks like, I think is what it says.
Yeah, game immediately ends.
And you score whatever the table condition is at the time.
Yep. Right, so you get no... Sorry, I should have phrased correctly. You get no additional scenario points in any way, shape, or form.
No, which means assassination is probably the most... has lost a lot of value, because before, if you're playing especially against a jack-heavy army, kill the caster, and you get most of your opponent's army... worth of points just on that act alone. And if it's almost entirely Jack, sometimes you get more than the opponent's army worth of value, because it's the Jack place plus 10 for the caster.
Good old tier list added to that a lot as well.
So, I mean, that makes assassination less valuable as an option, because as a tiebreaker, that's not as strong. In a lot of cases, it's less scenario points and it's less army kill points.
Plus... most of the terrain setup basically dictates as an LOS blocking terrain in the center of the table, and there's going to be at least 8 relevant pieces of terrain, and that means that there's a lot more places to hide a Warcaster, or like just And it's also kind of hard to shoot across a table, because if you're in one circle and you want to shoot to the other circle, there's probably going to be a giant forest or a house or something in the way. And most of the factions have lost their means of ignoring said obstructions. So you do, like, assassination, I've found, requires like 2 to 3 turns worth of setup in order to execute properly.
I've been finding it as a way to, the only way to come back from running out of scenario.
Yeah.
You know, right. when you're losing by scenario with the runaway points, that's suddenly when assassination starts to become relevant. Also because at that point in the game, there is, like you just mentioned, fewer other models on the table as well. But yes. It isn't the scenario. Let's put it this way. The scenarios do not specifically advocate making assassinations. You know what I mean? There's nothing in them that is encouraging that.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure why that was said, that kind of design point was said, except for perhaps that you couldn't really win by scenario very well before, but now we can.
So I think the aim was that because you couldn't win by scenario, you would seek an alternate win condition that would be assassination. The mm-hmm. failure in that for mine was that typically that just meant that you lost on attrition anyway.
Right.
Like you didn't right. get to go and have an assassination because your opponent had no reason to commit because they were already winning scenario. So right. you had to play attrition. That was the only option. And they took out dominate. So there's no, so they've done two things, right? There's more elements, and it's harder to score them unless you have a very balanced list, which means that you will see Warcasters coming up to score zones. They just don't have anything else in their army that can score them. So that hopefully will help.
Yes.
Yep.
But they took out Dominate, which was the prime drag to get a Warcaster to somewhere where other people could kill them. They added Killbox, slightly smaller than the old Killbox, but it's on everything now, which is good. And that, yes. certainly, that certainly kicks you up a little bit, I think. And although the terrain puts more terrain on the board, the way they've done it, it seems to put less in places that a Warcaster can be in without being almost in the game. So most of that terrain is very close to a scenario element and is almost near the center of the table in some sense. So for you to get full value out of it, other than just hiding behind it because it's line of sight blocking if it's a forest, you have to be up a little bit, which is okay.
Hmm.
I also like how they've removed the kill box from the sides.
Yes.
Because
yeah, I agree.
That was really silly. Actually, you had a game where you kill boxed yourself on the side.
I did. That was the worst. I'm like, I'm just going to go over here, and it's like, oh no, that's 12 inches from the board edge. I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah.
And I feel like I never ever did that in 2016 when kill box was around. But now that it's like a weird universal thing and scenarios are like way farther over,
yeah.
I remember in CID just like killboxing myself because, I mean, my scenario was like well into the 12-inch killbox, and I'm like, well, that's just awkward.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, in the first thing, it was the kill zone, and it was more the mild inconvenience zone, because if I remember correctly, you're like, oh, I guess I conceded 2 points. Back to killing you, though, because I also just scored 2 points, because my Warcaster just, you know, scored the zone, and I scored another thing, and I'm winning on attrition right now. But yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, mission accomplished. I've always said for 8 years now that Steamroller is as much a factor in this game as the rules themselves. And so it's a critical piece of documentation that they need to put out each year. And I really like, I'm not sure if it's going to last. I'm sure it will find ways to break it, which is okay. But in terms of the first impressions of it, it is a significant change and provides some tension against the other change, which is about theme lists. I'm really, you know, hats off to them for making this happen and giving us something really to dig into now, comparative to just making another reiteration of 2016.
Yeah, I totally agree. Because, I mean, I remember getting into the game, and that was around 2012, 2013. And I think that was the year of the gun line, because at that time the scenario pack had allowed you pretty much to sit back like a part of the board and just shoot anything that tried to go in scenario. And so that had developed an entire gunline meta.
Pre-dominate as well. So there was literally
no reason for a caster to move forward. And then after that, we saw more centralized scenarios that really required casters to like come into the middle of the board. And then we saw the rise of the brick, because the brick is just, I love this shit all day, all night. And the gunline just kind of disappeared because it was way less effective because they couldn't sit at the back of the board. And you can really
shooting Meat Mountain was horrible.
Yes.
Yeah. But I mean, you could really see how the meta was actually influenced as much by the scenario packet as any of the model releases were.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's why we've, like, 2016 felt a little stale, because it was really, really similar to 2015 in a lot of ways, when up till then we were really used to quite dynamic changes moving from packet to packet. There were always great improvements, but there were tweaks in it that really seemed to change how the meta developed. Well, yeah. 2016 came with the
new edition.
With the new edition, but that didn't really seem to energize people the same way packet changes had before.
Yeah, I don't mind that, because
that was a good call, though.
Yeah, no, the same reason they decided not to do it was simply because it was a new edition, and let's try not to break everything at once.
No, I completely right. agree, and I understand, but I feel like that was one of the things people noticed a lot. I remember hearing people talk, was like, yeah, oh, definitely. it's the same packet, nothing's really changed. Yeah. And that's not true. The game changed around it, but it was very familiar.
Yeah. One of the things I've heard a criticism for SR 2017, the early days, like basically CID, was that it was changed for change's sake. And I'll be honest, after reading this and more importantly playing it a bit, I'm happy with this pack because it doesn't feel like that. It feels like a bit of an evolution in a sense. It takes parts of... It has what you just described. It reminds me of when, frankly, Dominate was introduced as a mechanic and completely changed the value of casters. Like, all of a sudden, Borka 1 was now a great scenario caster because it couldn't fucking kill him, and he got rewarded for standing in people's faces and just beating his chest. And it was when models like, say, Waters came out, right? Waters would have not had as much impact as they did if they came out in the meta of the, like, you know, good old gunline.
You've got to run 36 inches to get 21.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, have fun with that. I'm like, no, thanks.
Turn 7 cap, your speed 4. Get in there, buddy. You're going to get one turn of melee before the game ends.
Yep.
Get wrecked.
So I have a tangential question about the pack. Yep. Your opinions on. So the normal steamroller is DNC 0, so you don't have to use each list more than 0 times if you don't want to. But somehow the Masters and Champions pack still requires you to use each list that you bring once. How do you feel about that in those particular formats?
I didn't even notice that, honestly.
I've never actually ever cared about DNC 1 or 0. I thought that was just fine. Like, I've never really seen people's issues with it, but to be fair, one thing I also haven't done a lot is go to American cons. And some events, like, I mean, Brian, you can describe one of your War Machine Weekend events where you were like, what was it, a 3-list event? DNC?
No, that was here in Australia.
Oh, okay.
That was for an IG event where the actual turnout was much smaller than what everyone thought, because it was painting required.
Right.
So we ended up having like a 4-round IG, which means I had 3 lists that I could only play 2 of in the early rounds, right. Which means I only got to bring 2 lists into the final rounds,
right.
Which means it got really weird for in terms of like list building at the end.
Yeah.
And that was weird, but that's IG. That's a very different scenario than Masters or...
But examples like that would kill DNC 1 for me if I had to keep fucking doing that. Or I like 3 list events. I really do, and I wish there were more of them. But I can tell you, 3-round, 3 list events would literally be just the worst.
So yes, they're the worst, but they're also kind of a crazy gauntlet, right? They just make it a very, very random chance. Like, better players are probably still going to migrate through, but it's going to be lucky chance on which player makes it through versus each other.
You know, I think
when you get down to it, I kind of like the idea of trying to make a difference between Masters and Champions. I would almost rather that they made Champions a DNC event with a number of DNC, because there you get specialists, and then on the other one make it no DNC because, you know, you're playing raw. So I would have liked to see them do that. I don't really mind. I'm used to playing DNC, and
I thought that's what they did with Champions. I think Champions wasn't it limited to the 4 casters on ADR, and then
yes.
Masters is the same thing, is all casters are available, but the casters on ADR get specialist. Isn't that how it works?
Yes.
Okay.
That's right.
Yeah. So I guess my point would be, I would be happier to see an ADR championship format or champions format with DNC to say, hey, you need to bring two lists. You're going to have specialists. You've got DNC. And then in Masters go, no, screw it. We don't need DNC anymore. But I understand a drive from them being PP, to put in DNC because DNC does force another level of both variation and sort of complexity into your list building, right?
Yes.
Mm.
And that's, I think that has some value still, even though I acknowledge that DNC Zero tournaments have not been a problem when I played in them recently and I have enjoyed them. I still feel like having to build a pair is a extra level of sort of access to the game for players as they come up. So you go from, I build a list, I play with a list, to I've just built this list, I know how to play it, I build some other random list to go with it because, you know, that's the other models I have, to, okay, what do I need to do to actually make this into a pair? And then onwards and upwards as a player as they get better. And that's, I think there's value in having that as a sort of escalation for players.
Yeah, agree.
Can I just check though, the Masters and that you're talking about there, were they, you know, usually Masters in Europe anyway are at 6 or 7 round type events where I agree DC Zero becomes less of an issue. So is that your experience, or are you also talking about maybe, let's say, a 4-round Masters?
I am happy to play a 4-round Masters with DNC 1. Mm-hmm. It's fine.
Okay.
I agree that sometimes you get screwed. It does happen. You play a pair, one of them is the right thing for you to play all 4 games, and you have to drop your off list into something, and sometimes it happens.
Yeah.
But I think there's value to... For me, there's value to that. It's an extra level to how you build your list and how you build your game. And that's, I think that's worth it.
Mm. Agreed. Three round DNC 1 is also fine. Like, it should be...
It's doable, right?
It's doable.
Sometimes you get fucked, but it's doable.
Yeah. It feel,
but
like,
is it worth it? That's the thing. It's the question of whether that... Yeah.
So I guess in answer to that, is it better to have a situation where... A faction where there is a clear list that is stronger than other lists, do you want the inbuilt sort of safety blanket of that player has to be able to play another list as well?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's valuable against... So things like Ghost Fleet, things like Halley 2 at the moment as they currently are, although we harp on them. Whatever list it is that you have that's super strong that can steamroll people and they have to bring a specific answer to it, and if they haven't got one, you're just going to drop that list all day and it's going to win. That list, I feel like you gain something for the tournament overall by that player having to play a different list once during the tournament.
Yeah.
Sure. But I mean, it's the same chance where they run into a pairing, like where they don't have an opportunity to drop the one list they brought versus the person who... It doesn't seem...
Yeah, I agree.
It's about the same both ways. It seems pretty rare in the case where they get fucked over by it. But
well, no. So here's the straight example. I bring Ghost Fleet and I bring an off list that counters a specific counter to Ghost Fleet.
Yes.
If I don't see that counter all day, then I'm good, right? I win all of my games playing Ghost Fleet. If I do see that counter, I have the counter for it and I'm good.
Sure, but
if I'm in
DNC
1, then I lose a game.
Yes, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, you're probably, as a Ghost Fleet player, going to run into somebody who's got at least some prep, you would think. I mean, there's a chance you don't, but... But I mean, it feels like either way, it's a wash.
Yeah, because you can go over the other example where, okay, I know that Colin's going to play Ghost Fleet, so I'm going to make a list that his sole purpose is to beat Ghost Fleet.
And then you never play Colin.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same situation both ways.
Yeah.
Where you might just run the day where you don't have the thing you thought you needed, or you do have the thing you thought you needed and never had to play into it, or...
But to be fair, yep. I like that DNC exists because it makes a list building exercise. It also means that you put a lot more thought into, like, my random counter for whether I'm going to run into Colin or not. Okay, well, I know it's DNC 1, so I'm going to have to drop this at some point, and I don't have a guarantee I'll play Colin. Why don't I just make this a more balanced, well-rounded, and good list? Why don't I put in the extra prep to see it? It doesn't have to be a full, silly, hard counter. I can probably shave a bit of efficiency to just make it just an all-round good list. Maybe it plays into something better than more than just Ghost Fleet, like, I don't know, Shadows of Retribution. I was going to say Shadows of Assyria, but, you know, that list. Right. And if it was DNC 0, I literally could just go like, okay, cool, here's Halley 2, and here's, I guess, Siege. Because if we're going to beat Ghost Fleet, let's just BM Ghost Fleet and beat them with, like, one of the more questionable Signar casters.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a choice you make when you're doing your pairing. But I mean, if you're being forced to make that choice, but at the same time, I'm more than happy to play multiple lists, because I mean, playing the same thing all day might be fun for some people and it might be not fun for others, but yeah. I mean, you'll play what you want to play, and I mean, there's probably another caster out there that you'll at least enjoy having a game with.
I can also offer the example that everyone will spout, or something, it's always existed in some form, is like that caster that they're just going to run it every fucking thing, and it's just going to be a really dumb game. In this case, it's going to be Kane 3. Like, let's just say you're DNC 0, and you're just like, here's a list that's Kane 3, and here's a list that looks legit, but I'm just going to drop Kane 3 all day, and I'm just going to, like, go in for the coin flip assassination on you all day.
Kane 3 is also, like, a perfect pairing to Haley, because you're just like, okay, yeah. So I can't drop Haley this round, so I'm just going to go for the all-in assassination. Let's go.
Yeah, let's go face.
I mean, there's games like that. Sorcerer can play that game if you want to set it up that way.
Yeah.
I mean, most factions can probably have a guy that goes, like, I'm just going to be the assassinate this turn because I don't want to play my actual list turn.
Even in Mark 1, there always existed that fucking caster who basically was the reason why DNC got invented. And it always changed. Is it Lilith? Is it fucking Kane 2? Is it, like, Haley?
Is it Lich 2?
Is it Lich 2? Oh, is it Sorcha 1? Is it Vlad 2? It's just like, the Kador player shows up with Vlad 2 and a list that looks legit, and then is just going to play Vlad 2 all day. You know, someone's going to have that. And
yeah,
I don't mind that DNC...
DNC 1 keeps you a little bit honest.
A little bit honest. And you know what? A little bit
honest.
Makes
it harder for you to bring a complete... Like, hey, I've got Baldur 2 with 2 Waldraths. I'm totally going to play it if you play something that I want to drop it into. I really am.
Yep.
DNC is...
Oh, wait, it's Morph.
I mean, some people really hate DNC. DNC has never been, like, that much of a problem for me. I've always just been like, okay, that's the situation. It's just a game I'm going to have to play. I like it a lot more than, like, character restrictions. Character restrictions were always just kind of...
Oh, that's kind of silly, yeah.
Yeah, they were always
I never
little...
understood that rule, because there's literally no rule reason that exists. In other words, you know, while it's fluffy to say, oh, you can't have this two of the same character because that doesn't make sense from a fictional point of view, there's essentially two different models. Just because they share a name doesn't make any difference.
No, I agree. And it always felt like really artificial. And I think at the time in Mark 2 and at points in Mark 1 when they introduced it, it was because it was really affecting list building, and we were just seeing the
same.
Hey,
hey,
Brian,
have one Gorman.
Or
so that's what it was for.
Well,
Brian, is the podcasting getting in the way of your drinking? Just asking. So, you know,
no, that would be Chris.
You know, I hear you're struggling.
So, what was your feeling, Norbert, on the DNC issue? Where do you stand?
I find that inconsistency between the two packs kind of odd. Just from that perspective, not whether one's better or the other. I definitely think that in Masters or Champions Defense, let's say, anything that runs to 6, even 5 perhaps, but even for certainly 6 or 7 rounds, DNC shouldn't make an issue. I still struggle with the philosophical arguments about whether, you know, forcing people to play both lists in a way to try to make the game a little more balanced is something that should be handled by PP on a rules models level type thing. I mean, because that's the argument that's a cheap way to fix it, and a lot of people have been saying that it's an outmoded way to fix it. So I don't know. I mean, I don't terribly mind it, to be honest with you, except for like being something silly, like if it's a 3-list format and it's only a 4-round.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something like that.
So I would say that to point to it and go, you know, that's a cheap way of fixing model imbalance issues is actually selling it short. Like, because the nature of the game is that it is we call it a paper, rock, scissor game, right? But it's not really. It's like paper, rock, scissor, and then 45 different flavors of each of those things.
Yes.
And they all interact differently. And we can't... It's very, very likely that you can have a single caster who has good matchups against a huge portion of the field. And it is quite likely, therefore, that you can have an opponent who runs into situations where they only have a very narrow window of things that can answer that caster. And therefore, by follows, if you've got someone who has bought that caster, it is quite possible that they can run into 4 games in a row that are all favorable for that one caster over and over again. And you can't easily fix that with internal balancing, despite what
That's
people want
point.
To think. It's super difficult to do. And DNC just just makes that slightly less likely to happen. It doesn't make it impossible. You still get lots and lots of tournaments where you turn up with your two lists, you play your off list into exactly what you wanted to play, and it works out well. That still happens. But it's not as likely that you will just get a straight run of every game I play is going to be in my favor. And I would like to think that when you are winning a tournament, you had at least one game in your run that was against your favor and you had to outplay the opponent.
Yeah. It also means that you can just have a pairing which has two quite balanced and good casters and they just happen to complement each other well. It doesn't have to be a case of here's my good caster and here's my off, especially if you've like had to put some thought in the matchup, because a lot of times you don't, you might want to go like 2-2 with your like dropping your two different casters into basically whatever happened flavor of like matchup they happen to be strong into. And DNC sort of gives an incentive to try and make your off list into not quite a hard noob stomp counter to something in the meta.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, as I said, I personally, I quite like three list events in general.
Well, let's go there because I actually posted up asking people how people felt about the fact that you can do triads now in Masters and Champions. And from my Facebook discussion, it was overwhelmingly against it, saying it just leads to skews. So what do you guys think about doing three list formats?
I always liked three list. I liked having more options. If I have to play a bunch of games and you're going to see a huge amount of table, I like to have a variety. I like to have a toolbox. I mean, lots of casters have toolboxes, but I like to have more specific toolboxes, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
I mean, it always means if you have to play a painted army, it's really frustrating to go and paint three lists before a tournament or something. But I always enjoyed having, like, okay, I can play my Gristle list here, I can play my Doomy 3 here, and I have another option for whatever my third list, which is probably a Grim over here. And, I mean, if I practice those lists enough, I can play them into a variety of different matchups, and it kind of fixes the, like, having the problem of you can't play the same list all day because you have a variety of different options to play into them. And it's, I've always enjoyed three lists.
I think it comes down to what you said earlier, Norbert, with regards to DNC becomes fine the more rounds go on. And if you've got like a 7 or 8 round tournament with DNC 1 but three lists, that to me is like a really nice balance point because you can run, you'll have to drop all three of your lists over the course of the day, but you have many, many rounds to do so. And it also means at that point, you can have like two balanced lists and one list that you just take for that matchup that you really hate that you're going to see. Easy example for me would be in Mark 2. I had a Kador pairing. It was like Arusk 2 and Butcher 3. And I'd bring a Vlad list specifically for Body and Soul. And when, like, Body and Soul, for what it's worth, is the Edeni tier, the one where your upkeep started on your models, and it was, like, it was a goddamn cancer list, right? But that list, I could put the upkeep removal in, I could put the little tools in necessary, and Body and Soul was fairly common, right? And then once three lists of...
Ask any WTC player at 2016.
No, but this is where I reveal that I was at ground zero because I was the first fucking victim of Rob Shepard's a crusade to make to play Body and Soul. That year, I went 1-10 against Edeni, and the only win I got was not against Robert. It was against someone not playing Body and Soul, and he forgot to feat.
Nah.
Jumping back to that question, because I actually find it really interesting. I'm gonna divert into a little bit of peasant interpretation of game theory, because I don't claim to be a genius by any stretch in that area,
Colin.
Or any area as it turns out. But anyway, if you take that standard sliding scale of going from a game like Snakes and Ladders to a game that has virtually no dice in it at all, so something like chess, where it's basically straight strategy. If those are your two extremes, and one is completely decided by luck, and one is completely decided by skill, I think the change from two list to three list, and if you then implement DNC, is another little step moving you towards more randomness in your chance of winning a tournament. So that's why I think it pisses off a lot of people, because a lot of our gamership is kind of divided, right? Competitive players tend to skew towards the, hey, I want to play chess, but I don't really want to play chess side.
Yeah.
And casual gamers tend to skew towards the, I want to play Snakes and Ladders, but I want it to involve a shitload of strategy on my side, so I feel like I'm controlling it rather than it's pure random chance. And that's why you end up with this, well, this is my opinion, obviously, but that's why you end up with such a strong pushback when you add something to the game that adds another level of random chance. So if you add something like D&C, and then you add multiple different scenarios that change how the game can play, and then you add another list, you suddenly get to the point where a player who wants to play the chess side of the game feels like they need six different things to line up in order for them to get the matchup that they can then go away and practice and be good at so that they can win. So you're sitting in that sort of queasy spot, particularly for players who, and obviously wildly out on a limb now, but for players who aren't yet at the point where they feel comfortable with a shitload of different things. Mm. So if you take someone like Pagani and you go, all right, I'm going to pick three random lists for you, blind pick them before the start of the tournament, you're going to have to play them and it's going to be D&C 1, he'll enjoy playing that tournament. Right? Doesn't matter what list you give him. Yes, he'll probably lose a game because he's playing random lists, but he will enjoy that tournament because that's the kind of player he is. And I am much the same. If you give me three random lists, I will go out there and play them because I want to play them. I enjoy playing them and trying to play them. But there are a shitload of people who don't. There are a shitload of people who want to play the game by learning a list, working out what the matchups are for that list, being able to play that list in an environment where they feel like their practice pays off and they get rewarded for their practice and they play and play better than their opponent. So any factor that you add that makes it not about whether or not they play better than their opponent, in their mind, makes them very upset.
Yeah. Now, you guys have been talking on a macro level. The one micro level argument that was brought up as well is that it leads to making bad habits in list design, in your list design, because it's just it advocates creating lots of SKUs, and then it becomes just a list checking situation. How would you respond to that?
Personally speaking, I actually can buy a different argument, which is that it's a bigger barrier to entry for newer players because getting three lists assembled, not even painted, just like getting the models for them, that's a bit of an issue. And at that point, what I actually see more happening is you get the said newer person, he'll take fairly similar lists because of model double up. Like, let's just go trolls in MK2 because, you know, Brian has brought it up a couple of times, and trolls were a particular faction that I think enjoyed three list environments quite a bit. I could take double warders. I could take them in two lists. From a just pure money standpoint, that's...
Logistics and money.
I don't have to pack away a million trolls. I don't have to pack away like a million cabers for my Creel unit. That I can tell you the flip opposite, which was I had like 110 models at one of the Australian Masters and no overlap between any of the lists barring one model, the War Dog, because of a combination.
And I think that
argument
is going to only get stronger in a Theme Force environment.
Agreed. So that's a bit of a problem. That's like an argument I can buy. However, in terms of doing SKUs and list chicken, well, to be honest, most people would have to account for said SKUs anyway. It does make it a little bit more silly when you've got like, here's a Kane 3, here's a Trencher Cloud Wall from Haley 3, and here's a Haley 2 list. Pick one of these three flavors of poison. They're all going to suck. But
so in the three list tournaments that I've been in, I have never seen the winner decided by having a SKU that nobody was able to answer. But for the middle of the field, for the people who are coming into the game and aren't necessarily in that top sort of four players that are in the tournament, I have definitely seen games where somebody has turned up in the middle of the field or in the top of the field with one SKU that has cleaned people out because they just didn't have an answer to it. And Doom Reavers used to do that occasionally.
Yeah.
Okay.
And in Mark III, I haven't seen it as much because I haven't seen three list tournaments in Mark III because I moved back to Australia and we just haven't had many. But
well, we'd only have IGs like once a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think there is. So I think there's the same problem that we have all the time, which is when you're discussing the game with people who are playing at the very top level of the game, their view of how things affect the game is different to the view of the majority of players. And it's not necessarily more right or more wrong. It's just that they're experiencing a different game most of the time.
So here's my perspective, because I guess I'm not sure about Norbert, but like out of the three of us who I've have quite experience like playing against, you and Chris, I would say, are like top of the game players. And I would say I'm still one of those people who are sitting at the cusp of, you know, like the X and ones, the guy who's like trying to break through into like that top. And I've done it before. And then because of a bunch of other situations, I didn't get to play as much. And I think I've maybe lost a bit in that period of time. And I'm probably still in that X and one bracket. And I've always found, like, it doesn't matter what your matchups are, you just have to win your games. If you get paired up into a bad one, the only way, the only excuse yes. you have is, I need to play better. And the best way to do that is to find the list that you're comfortable with, the ones that you know you can play into matchups that are bad for you and still bring out a win because you know how well they play.
Mm.
And, like, it's tough to do that because you're going to hit that brick wall a lot. And I've felt it. I've done it. You walk into that wall over and over again. But at the same time, like, that's how you get better. That's how all the top players get better. They just play games. They just learn the matchups and they know the strengths of their lists. I mean, that's one of the reasons why Chris went to Lock and Load last year with Irusk 2, who most people thought was a garbage tier caster in Mark 2. And, like, just raffle stomped his way to, like, the end, and he had games where he was and I mean, to be fair, I watched most of those games. Chris had some pretty tough games where he almost he was on the cusp of losing, but I mean, that's because he knew his lists really well. He played those lists, he practiced those lists. Colin's the same. Colin's really good at theorizing really cool interactions and then being able to pull them out in really awkward situations where most players would be like, I couldn't even see that. Colin's the king of shovel. I mean, he's a guy who can pull out really weird interactions and pull out really weird ideas at the drop of a hat because that's the thing that that like clicks in his head. Those are the things he practices. Those are the things he sees on the table, and he only does that by playing and list building. And like that's what it takes to be those kind of players, and like that's what you have to see, and that's just what you kind of have to keep doing. Everyone has a different path to the top, but it all comes down to practice, and that's hard to say. I mean, not everyone has the same amount of time. I mean, a couple of us, like, in the city meta are just a bunch of, like, young 20 to 30-year-olds who have a lot of time. Not many of us have families, and so we have a lot of time that we can spend, and not everyone has that. But, I mean, it's just about playing the game in the end. And as an X and 1 player, it's just learning your list, practicing your list, and doing your best, and then learning from any mistakes you make and improving on that. Like, that's all I got to say. Like, you can't blame bad matchups all day. It sucks. It'll ruin your day. Bad dice will also ruin your day. But all you have to learn is how to play through that and do your next game and then learn from those as well. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I'll put it this way. There's a lot of cancer in War Machine. A lot of cancer. Like, there are different flavors of cancer. Like, you're just saying there's going to be a lot of skews. Right, it's another flavor of cancer. But you know what? Balanced lists can be cancerous as well. Like,
Can, especially as we...
We've been ranting about several lists which are like, oh, it's a bit of a problem indirectly because they're issues. Like, those are always going to happen. If you had a one-list tournament, we'd complain about skews all the time. If you had a two-list tournament, we are complaining about skews all the time.
I mean, it's not just about skews. It's just about that really good list. And, I mean, everybody's got plays a faction somewhere where they have the answer to the list. And they don't. They just have it. And they're like, oh, man, I just don't give a shit about Una 2. I have, like, the answer. I mean, when I played Trolls had a pretty good run into Haley 2 in Mark 2.
Yeah.
Where they were just like, what's that caster? And so you'd be the guy that was hunting all the Haley 2 players for everybody. And everyone else was, like, clapping. They're like, go Trolls!
Go Trolls!
Until then, they got your matchup. And they're like, okay, finally, I get the easy one. And you're just like, damn it. And, I mean, Trolls got pretty good at the end, and if you were good with your Trolls, you were a good player. But, I mean, at the same time, every faction has their good and bad matchups into the lists of the time.
Yeah.
And so that's all about getting people to play a variety of different lists, learning what
good matchups are. So, short answer, two lists, three lists, get good. Is that what
we're saying? Yeah, pretty much.
Don't be bad.
I didn't want to say that, because last time I did that on the internet, it forms.
No, look, guys,
that's a wrap, people. We're done.
Just say that I'm the one who said that, because everyone blames me for it anyway. All right, well, in that case, I actually got two things to note out.
I've got a cut, and so does Norbert, I think.
Ah, fair enough, then.
Yeah.
I just wanted you to tell about your planned shovel, Colin, but I guess we'll save that for another time, because that was a pretty...
I understand.
No, I want to compliment you guys, actually, because I was just Googling Australia, and even though it does have salt mines, there's a remarkable no amount of salt in this episode. So,
we have an entire lake filled with salt, but it's all dried up, so,
It's hard to
get to.
It's further away than basically anywhere in Europe from where you're currently sitting.
Yes. And then you get there, it's just really hot and like you were complaining earlier about basically like the difference in like latitude and all that between London and New York. Well, this is in the middle of South Australia. There are snakes everywhere. It's just cracked land. It's apparently a really good place to do dirt biking, but if you get left behind, you're just looking at a salt plain as far as the eye can see.
You're like multiple hundreds of kilometers away from Adelaide.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that place is not a place that you want to be hundreds of kilometers away from.
Because
what we're saying is Australia is good for War Machine.
I
think so. I mean, we have a pretty good community with a lot of like good guys who are just happy to play the game.
And Frawley.
Yeah, well, there's Frawley. I mean, he's got enough salt for the rest of us. And I think that's what keeps us balanced. He keeps our pH levels balanced.
Yeah, he does. All right. Well, in that case, thank you very much, Norbert, for coming along.
My pleasure. It was really nice to speak to some of you guys, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in like 2 months' time.
I'll see you in about a week or so, unless you're going to kick me out into the fields of London, at which point I'm going to find out just how cold it is when sun goes down at 3 p.m.
Right, it's summer over there right now, right?
Yeah. Oh, sweet, yes.
Well, summer.
It was summer last Thursday. Now it's autumn. Is that
probably.
August. Being from the Northern Hemisphere, August is like, okay, it's going to, depending on the time of year, it might just, you know, like drop. Like July is really nice. June's pretty good. August is like, oh man, we're coming on September. The leaves are starting to turn. Oh God, here comes winter. Oh God, no. No.
In the case of London, it's, oh God, there goes all of our public transport for the next 3 months.
Yes.
What, really?
All right.
Thanks, Colin.
Thank you all very
everyone,
much.
Thank you,
Norbert.
Yep.
Have a good night, guys.
Thanks.
Cheers,
man.
See ya.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Bye.
And one quick note before...
Oh, God.
Okay, well, while they're gone...
should I hang up for this?
No. I was actually going to say one final thing regarding the... it was the American Lock and Load convention. Because it was actually leads into your thing of just, like, you have to play and practice a list. So, no big secret, right? James Morehouse used to play a fair bit in Australia. Like, a lot. And he used to play E. Kruger a fucking lot. So, me and James sort of got this ritual dance almost. So, basically, I'd beat him on attrition, then he'd try and kill my caster, and then we'd keep dancing and dancing. We'd sort of next level each other trying to do this. And then I had to play Brett Fogel in the IGE finals. And one of the little tricks I'd personally worked out was that I had Alexia in my list, and it was a Rusk 2. And one of the tricks I'd worked out is if you just have all of your Risen go in a conga line to the back of the table, it's really good. You could set up a giant catcher's mitt to catch your models being feeded back by Epic Kruger. Now, no one had told the PP commentators this, and frankly, you know, it's a little bit of one of my tricks, right? And it's only really relevant in, say, one matchup, but it's a matchup I had a shit ton of practice in. And fucking listen to the PP commentators go like, what on earth is going on with that conga line? Just like, hang on a minute. That kind of stuff only comes through practice, and that kind of stuff only comes through just hammering in your lists. And you know what? Since Brian stole my thunder a lot of the time, just with that bit of a very good, like, well-articulated comment, but still stealing my thunder, allow me to end it on get good.
Oh my God.
Get good.
You just had to toot your own horn, didn't you?
Of course.
God damn it.
All right, guys, take it easy.
Cheers, man.
Thanks, Norbert. Have a good
night. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.